Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening we'll talk about the observance of human rights in Africa in the year 2013. With us tonight is my colleague Henok Fente of VOA's Horn of Africa service. Henok, welcome to the program again.
Thank you very much, Douglas. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Suleiman Mugula is joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's a regular panelist on this program, and he's an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Suleiman, once again, welcome to the show.
It is always a pleasure to be with you, Douglas, and your listeners.
Good to have you on. Well, as I said, our topic tonight is going to be the human rights for this year in Africa. Henok, mixed bag on the continent.
Indeed, Douglas. What we've witnessed over the past year is human rights records in Africa throughout the continent. If you take into account civilians under conflict, we have civil wars going on in the Central African Republic and coup d'etats happening throughout the continent. So whenever there is unstable political atmosphere, you have civilians who are suffering under conflict. And we also have witnessed a number of natural disasters. So the rights of refugees in camps, as well as political repression. So it's been a bad year for Africans as far as human rights goes.
Yes, Suleiman, the coming right from up north, in maybe even people had high hopes after the Arab Spring, so-called Arab Spring. Even the few rights that the Egyptians had, for instance, are being scaled down. A law was passed, I think, in October, November, banning people assembling and association, and banning some political organizations.
Yes, I think to put it in the other way around, we can say that the look at human rights is almost an equivalent of looking at the state of governability or the state of governance in a particular country. Those countries which are relatively well governed, they have observed and they continue to make progress as far as the observance of human rights are concerned. Those countries which have no proper governance, they are continuing to deteriorate as far as the observance of human rights are concerned. Let me start here, home in South Africa. South Africa, if you look at our Constitution, Chapter 2 has got Bill of Rights. And you'll find that every activity of private citizen, every activity of government, every policy of government and activities of government are ruled, are determined by the Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. In South Africa, you can't do anything without the observance of the Bill of Rights. There is the right of equality, right to human dignity, right to life, right to freedom, security of persons. These ones inform the policies which we have. You cannot be tortured. You cannot be arrested without cause. You cannot be held in detention without charge. We have got even social and economic rights. For us, as far as the other rights of human rights, the human dignity, right to life, they are no longer a problem. The only problem which we have are the social and economic rights. Yes, in October we had a problem with the murder in Marikana, but those are isolated cases. They are not institutionalized like in many other countries in Africa, the way you have mentioned in Egypt, where now laws are being passed in contravention of people's rights.
So if I may add to this idea, I mean, if you take a look at what has been transpiring in North Africa, you talked about the Arab Spring, and of course, regimes that administered very many countries have been overthrown. But the transition from a rebellion or street violence into a civilian administration has been quite difficult. And in the process, human rights have been trumped in Egypt, in Libya, as well as to a certain extent also political killings in Tunisia. And so what we're looking at is these countries that have launched successful either coup d'etats or public protests against these regimes are suffering, transitioning into a peaceful administration because of the absence of political tolerance, as well as, most importantly, absence of institutions. The courts, the media, very important here. And also, Douglas, if you take a look at some of the political environment in Africa, governance is at its lowest. The Mo Ibrahim Foundation, for yet another third year, did not
find a suitable candidate, suitable winner.
Yes, we have 54 nations, and not even one is suitable for a governance prize. So it shows you the state of human rights. Media rights is very important in Africa, and we've talked about this in this show. It was a bad year in many regards, journalists being killed. Political rights, political opposition have been pushed to the margins, especially with the coming of anti-terrorism laws being passed in many parliaments in Africa. So that had been a challenge throughout the continent. And civil rights, citizens' right to associate, to express themselves freely, has been trumped, which has led to unspoken human rights violations and widespread impunity to security forces and government officials who violate the rights of their citizens.
Right.
So taking a look at 2012-2013, it has been a challenge for the continent.
And you see, there are people who say they are those who are the champions, countries like Eritrea, where it's a well-known factor that the human rights are being trampled on without anybody raising a finger. Of course, there's some noise in the Western media, but that's as far as it goes. Then there are those who create a facade of democracy but keep cutting down on these rights by putting up draconian laws, by tramping down on the press, as you say. These don't seem to get a lot of blame because right from Egypt downwards to Sudan to Ethiopia to Uganda, Rwanda, there have been grumblings, but nothing seems to be. In other words, I'm trying to say is that the blame is not equal.
Well, the blame is not equal. You talked about Eritrea, and in fact, Eritrea is one of the countries that's being reprimanded for its human rights record. That's because Eritrea's government does not want Western interference, so it doesn't work with Western governments, so they're not the darling. But what you see increasingly, which I think is going to be a challenge looking ahead for human rights in Africa, is the increased militarization of governments as well as international. Talk about the U.S. has very many military bases. France has many military bases. In some cases, it's for the protection of civilians. But we're looking at increased militarization in the continent. And this has also led to propping up governments, dictatorships, and administrations that do not necessarily comply to the principles of democracy, which is against the principles that some of these countries are trying to advocate in the continent, and some of the change that they want to introduce in the political and governance structure of the continent. So what we see is propping up these dictators. If they are an ally against terrorism, then you can trump all sorts of human rights records and you'd still be given, you know, the support. Talk about Ethiopia, Egypt, Uganda, Rwanda. All these leaders are suppressing freedom in their countries. And at the same time, they're one of the largest recipients of military aid and foreign aid.
That's true. So in other words, Suleiman, they are human rights, and again, they are human rights. So there's a way that is being, you can go out with it so long as you play ball, as they say.
Yes, Douglas. actually, to begin with, the African Union's reaction to the prosecution of the leadership in Kenya shows the mindset of the leadership in Africa as far as human rights is concerned. It seems there was an overwhelming understanding that the rights of the leaders matter more than the 1,000 people who died and some of them who got injured and others who are still in the camps. That one shows you the level at which we are at the leadership level. The way my colleague has put it, if you look country by country, those who receive the aid, most of the aid, or those who are the favorites of the Western countries, are the ones who are suppressing their people more. At the moment, country by country, the level of abuse, the level of torture, the level of harassment, I mean, there is no right of association in most of these countries. Mm-hmm. If you look at Rwanda, Victoria Ngabire, Bernard Ntaganda, they are still in prison because of their political views. If you look in Uganda, the political opposition, Dr. Besigye and others, they are in and out of prison, of police cells. They are tortured almost every day. At the moment, they don't even have the right to move out of their houses because they fear the people will congregate around them. Mm-hmm. When you look in Ethiopia, journalists and politicians, I mean, Nega is still in prison for 18 years, and so many other politicians. People are being tortured every day. So you move from Ethiopia, the way my friend has said, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Uganda, DRC, all the way down, we are facing problems as far as human rights are concerned.
So, Henok, and we talk. There are several several human rights that ought to be respected, and take for instance the right of refugees. There have been countries that have been fading back political asylees back to their countries from which they fled. That should be a cause for concern too.
It is a cause for concern. I think aside from the political repressions, if we start talking about the rights and the protection of civilians under conflict and the protection of civilians suffering from natural disaster, and as far as scale goes, that accounts for most of the human rights issues in the continent, because over the past year we've seen little semblance of governance in Somalia, but still the country's human rights record and protection of civilians in Somalia's very many conflicts. There's a lot that needs to be done. And of course, a country that's been ravaged by civil war and natural disaster for the past 20 years, you can only imagine. Capacity is a big issue. So there needs to be a lot of work that needs to be done as far as reforms of security sector reforms and building capacity of the military. In the Central African Republic right now, it is the most catastrophic political as well as human rights issue in the continent, potential for religious conflict and political conflict just simmering, and the international community as well as the African Union scrambling to make sure that there's peace and security being restored. In the Congo, people are being displaced. The Sudan, in the Darfur area, the conflict in Abyei and all of this, South Kordofan. These are human rights issues that still continue to put a damper on the lives of citizens. Mali, not to forget, last year, the northern part of the country was occupied by Islamists who were publicly cutting hands and whipping people and basically trying to put an extreme version of a Sharia law into a vast area. So all these records, all this protection of human rights for civilians under conflict and natural disaster, there's a lot that remains to be done.
Well, let's take a short break and we'll be back to continue our discussion of human rights in Africa in the year 2013.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing human rights in Africa in the year 2013. Our panelists are Henoch Fente of VOA's Horn of Africa service and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Sipuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Gentlemen, we talked about... when we zero in on these human rights, taking for instance the basic human right of people to freely and peacefully assemble, to petition their government, aren't we asking too much to ask from pseudo-dictators or people who claim to be democratic and are not, and you expect them to allow people to assemble and demand and ask for their rights and put government to account? Is that asking too much, you think, Suleiman?
No, if they allege that they are democratic, then why shouldn't they play the game? Because look at Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe was regarded to be a country which was democratic for some time. But up to today, it is one of the countries which is violating people's rights so heavily. The people who suffered in the 2008 election in Zimbabwe, they have never received justice. They still torture. There is still arbitrary arrest. There is still violation of human rights. Mm-hmm. A human rights activist has just been released from prison without any specific charge. So these countries, we are not begging them. The citizens are not begging them. If one is not ready to avail good leadership, why contest leadership? They should leave other people to govern. In any case, all these who are violating people's rights, they have been in power for 10, 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I think people have a right. What is problematic is the silence around their actions. The African Commission on Human Rights is so silent. It is not taking action. The international community has continued to give aid to these particular countries, which means it is abetting the crimes which they are committing against humanity. So, at one level, I would like to exonerate the international community, because at least America was able to stand by the Chadian people when it supported the movement towards the prosecution of Sendi Habré. And even other European countries have put in a lot of money to see that Sendi Habré is being prosecuted. But we are talking of 20 years of silence. So the victims who suffered under Sendi Habré have been waiting for justice up to all those years.
One thing I'd like to add, and I think it's very important also, is the protection of women and children in the continent. Mm. Because whenever conflicts arise, whenever natural disasters arise, protecting women and children should be a priority. And this capacity has been curtailed through the passage of civil society laws throughout the continent. And over the past couple of years, and last year included, countries like Eritrea, Ethiopia, Rwanda, I think Kenya too, passed a civil society law that regulates, and more African countries are trying to regulate the activities of civil society. And in fact, the trend shows that governments want civil society to focus on development and to go as far away from political as well as political advocacy. And this could be women's rights and children's rights. So any kind of rights-based approach work by civil societies in the continent is frowned upon. And in fact, they are drying their funding opportunities. In Ethiopia, if you want to work in rights-based civil society work, be it grassroots or national, you have to get 90% of your funding from within the country, only 10%. So this has dried funding for right-based approach towards the protection of women and children.
Yeah, and Suleiman Henoch here is that a very crucial issue, because now what appears to be happening is like a chicken and an egg, a vicious circle. The institutions are broken down or deliberately destroyed. Then you curtail the work of civil society who would be agitating or advocating for these some of these rights. And then impunity grows, and then human rights are abused, and it keeps on and on. It's like a vicious circle. How does it get broken?
The international community needs to stop the double standards. They need to come out clearly and state where they stand. I mean, if there is violation in Zimbabwe and Sudan, and they shout on top of their voices, but when there is violation in Rwanda, when there is violation in Uganda, they keep quiet because Uganda and Rwanda have got soldiers in Darfur and in Somalia. That is unfair. I mean, for a decade now, we have had extrajudicial killings, impunity, torture in Uganda. About 49 people have died in the hands of police in broad daylight in Uganda from 2009 to 2011. Nothing has been said. If those particular people had died in Zimbabwe, there would be a lot of noise. If they had died in Sudan, there would be a lot of noise. So point number one, we need to see the international community coming out in open without double standard. Let there be a uniform standard put on all countries. If we are respecting, every life is important, whether in Rwanda, whether in Uganda, whether in Zimbabwe, whether in Sudan or Mozambique. So there should be no sacred cows as far as the protection of human rights is concerned. So if the international community can put conditions on the aid and the help which they are giving these countries, if it can stop aiding these regimes which have destroyed the institutions, then we can see a movement. But so long as the United States of America, UK, and others continue to pour money in Rwanda, in Uganda, in Ethiopia, in DRC to help the regimes to buy more arms, to buy more tear gas, to give more money to those who kill others, then we shall not have a movement on the continent.
I see. Further to that, Henoch, what should the masses, the people themselves, because basically it's their rights that are being trampled on, what should they do to make sure that maybe their rights are respected?
I think what will break this vicious circle you're talking about is, as Africans, what should Africans do? And what should the international community do? And where should the focus be? I think the most important thing is building institutions. Institutionalization is key. Africans need to work in their courts and fight for the courts to be independent, media to be independent, and to have a clear power structure where the different roles and responsibilities of governments and ruling parties are clearly defined, where citizens actively engage in the different power centers throughout the continent, and they have a say in the decision-making body of these different power centers. And of course, this is theoretical, but how can we make it happen is institutionalization is very important. And added to that is constitutionalism. It's vital that governments really respect and understand if they are asking their citizens to respect the constitutions, the governments need to respect the constitution. They need to stop coming up with directives and different kinds of laws that actually curtail and violate the constitution, like press laws, civil society laws, anti-terrorism laws, that are actually in direct contradiction to the rule that governs the country, mm-hmm. you know, in total, which is the constitution. So all in all, improving governance really relies on what the international community wants to do in the long term and what Africans want to do in the long term. Because what we have right now is the international community propping these dictators for short-term gains in international policy. International policy has to look at the long-term interest of the people, not convenience, an arrangement of convenience with a ruling party or with a government, which is counterproductive for the citizens of Africa and the citizens of the United States and Europe.
So long as the dictators are still in place, there are no rights which are going to be observed. And there is no way the citizens are going to exert their rights. That is why we are appealing to the international community, because they are the only ones who have got a river on those particular dictatorial regimes.
And finally, if I may add, we have to also discuss the China factor in Africa, because increasingly more and more African leaders are
turning China.
Yes, looking at China.
You are right.
The talk is developmental state is the talk of the town these days. But really, developmental state and the philosophy behind it, where a country needs to have a strong, firm leader that's going to stay in power in order to ensure economic growth, I think is an argument for the convenience of dictators, basically to say we'll have a few leaders staying in power for the longest time. That's the only way we can ensure you that there will be progress. And of course, with stability, any form of political stability will come progress, because as long as there is peace, that the country is not at war, there is production, productivity increases, and of course, the international community wants to put money in there. There is remittance from Africans living overseas, and Africa's economy has been growing. So all these positive things going on in the continent. But the most important thing is, how can we make this sustainable in the long term? And, you know, China really doesn't interfere as a policy with local governance issues. And that is also another short-term deal that China is making with African countries, at least the Westerns. They try to talk sometimes superficially and in other cases from the bottom of their hearts to try to have democratic governance in the continent. But you don't see that as far as China goes.
Suleiman, yes, I want a very brief answer. We have about 10 seconds left. Do you anticipate a change between 2013 and next year of 2014, that things may be better or worse? What's your prediction?
Number one, so long as we are still moving on the premise that we need development before democracy, there is no hope. Until when the international community realizes that we need good governance, we need transparent and a responsible, accountable government first before we get development, we won't move. I don't have hope, because like many policies which we have tried, they have poured a lot of money into the continent. They have given all these regime all the loans they want, but on the ground, there isn't much change.
Well, that will be the last word for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thank you to my colleague, Henok Fente of VOA Horn of Africa Service. Henok, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Douglas.
And thank you, Suleiman Mugulan, independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Suleiman, thanks as usual.
It is always a pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're welcome. My producer has been Jackson Mfunganyi, and we'll be back next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. But once again, thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington, wishing you a very wonderful week.